This podcast is from the Kentucky Women Writers Conference, made possible by the University of Kentucky in Lexington. This seminar is entitled Cooking a Book. Writer and award-winning pastry chef Stella Parks explains how to develop a book proposal and how she made the leap from blogger to author. Her blog is Brave Tart, and her book, Sweet Truth, A Secret History of Iconic American Desserts, is forthcoming from Norton in 2014.
I'm Stella Parks, and I'm here to talk about how to cook a book, how to write a book proposal. So if you're here for tips on creative accounting, then it's the wrong session. Anyhow, what I really want to talk about is my transition from obscure food blogger to super famous New York Times bestselling author. And I have not quite made that transition yet, so I'm still in the obscure food blogger stage and trying to transition out of that. And I was born and raised here in Lexington and went to culinary school in New York right out of high school and graduated from there, came back, worked in Lexington for a little bit, kind of had a bit of a quarter-life crisis, and moved to Japan for a little while, kind of an interlude there. I was in language school full-time, so it was not even remotely related to my culinary career. But I'm back, and I'm here in Lexington, and I'm the pastry chef at Table 310. And online, I'm better known as Brave Tart, and I blog all my adventures and have for the last 2 years at bravetart.com. And the last year has been a little crazy for me, to say the least. Earlier this year, Fox News called Brave Tart one of the best food blogs to check out now, and the New York Times published my recipe for Oreos, calling it the best copycat recipe there was, better than Thomas Keller's recipe, and Food and Wine named me one of the top 5 best new pastry chefs in America, which was kind of overwhelming. But 2 years ago, I didn't have any of those accolades. I didn't even have a job. So really all of this has come from my blog. And so that's what I want to talk about in the first part of this presentation, is how a blog and building a platform, as Anna was talking about earlier, being able to build a platform for yourself is huge and incredibly important. And Brave Tart has come completely handy in that regard, able to help me do all of these things. So, let's start with here. I do want to get into talking about agents and book proposals in a little bit, but before kind of launching into that, I guess I'll tell a little bit more of my story and what Brave Tart is like for me. Even though I'm a pastry chef and a food blogger, those aren't the relevant details. So, you know, whenever I say cookbook or food blog, just, you know, cross it out and replace it with whatever your genre is, whether that's sci-fi or sociology. The important part and the thing that matters to each of us individually is that we're writers, and our work is quiet. And I think generally speaking, so are we. We're not out there getting attention for us, for ourselves. You know, a model can walk down the street and maybe get noticed by a director, or an artist can just put their work on the wall and someone can see it, and a musician can play shows and do a tour, and some people can just grab a video camera and become an overnight sensation on YouTube. And so what a blog does is it lets us get attention when we're not very good at doing that ourselves, and it's a way for us to use words to our advantage and lets you get noticed. And one of the things that I hear about, I meet a lot of people who do say, oh, I do want to write a book, and they're interested in writing and launching their career more, and they'll say, well, I'm not a blogger, I'm a writer. And I get that. Like, nobody wants to grow up to be a blogger. I mean, the word itself is totally distasteful. It's like blogger, blog, blah. Like, I don't want to do that. But that kind of attitude is like saying, I'm not a driver, I'm a traveler. It's really nice to conceptualize yourself as a traveler, but sometimes we have to get farther than our feet can take us, and getting in a car helps. So a blog is really just a vehicle for your words. So I don't know if anyone here has a blog or not, but if you don't, I hope you can change your perception of one, and that it's not this all about me. Well, it is all about me, but it's not necessarily this self-serving idol where you just get up there and say how important you are, but it is a thing that can show other people what you're good at and can showcase what you're good at as a writer, and that should ideally be putting words together. In the realm of nonfiction in particular, blog to book is an absolute powerhouse. In the last year alone, just looking at the food blog category of that specifically, we've had dozens of publications from Herbivoracious, Savory Sweet Life, The Gluten-Free Girl. There's obviously Julie and Julia, Orangette, The Pioneer Woman, Love and Olive Oil, Shape Him. These are a lot of blogs that you may never have heard of, but they're being published by major publishers, and they're getting significant advances and making a career for themselves as a writer. So I think that's really important to remember is, you know, they may not be super famous and you haven't heard of them, but they are getting what they want, and that is to further this career. And of course, not all of these titles have the blog to book to Hollywood blockbuster kind of pattern that Julie and Julia set out for us, but Reese Witherspoon is slated to play the Pioneer Woman in the movie, so the dream kind of gets a little bit bigger as you look for the ideal there. But what these blogs are doing is establishing these women as writers and letting them have a second book. My friend Shauna Hearn is Gluten-Free Girl, and her second book is coming out any day now. Maybe it's her third. She's really been prolific. And that's what it's all about. These women, most of these food bloggers are women, so that's another important thing to consider. This is a genre that does really well for us because we, you know, despite trying to break out of any type of feminist interpretation of women getting out of the kitchen, there's still this impression that, well, we are really secretly better at being in the kitchen, and that genre does do very well. But a blog lets you demonstrate your marketability to publishers, and as Anna was talking about before, that's hugely important because they want to know that you're going to be able to be a star for them or be a presence that they can rely on to help sell the book as well. So I'm not going to get into any details about how to blog or how to improve a blog you already have or anything like that, but I would like to talk about some of the aspects of blogging that I think really benefited me and that you could also consider for yourself if you're thinking about starting one or if you have started one and have abandoned it, maybe just some points that you hadn't previously considered in that. For me, really in every way you could possibly measure it, blogging has made me a better writer. And the first and most important thing that it's done for me is it holds me accountable. When I was 16, I started writing my first novel, and I had this really great idea. I still think it's a great idea, and I wrote constantly worked on the story and this idea, and it wasn't until I had a blog that I learned how to finish anything. I'm 31 years old, so you can kind of see how many years were invested in continuing to write this novel but not going anywhere. And if you are not known for finishing pieces, if you just like to write, and you're always writing on this or that, but don't have any finished pieces that if an editor said, give me a sample of your work, you could pull it right out and say, here's a sample. A blog can help you do that. It can help you learn how to stay on a target, because ideally you should be posting once a week. And so by doing that, you're challenging yourself to tell a new story every week. And some people have blogs that are more of product reviews and not really a narrative involved. They're just posting something just to post it. And if you can stay away from that and focus on telling a story and writing it and editing it and proving it and agonizing over it and publishing it once a week, it's a hugely powerful motivator. And because it's online, I mean, if you're a very self-motivated person, you can do this without a blog. You won't need it. Just sit down and write. Give yourself that time every week to be in your writing closet and go for it. But for me, knowing that my efforts were online held me accountable in a way that I would never have had on my own. And I've proven that I would never have had on my own based on my, you know, 20 years of not finishing anything. And so just having that sense of, I didn't want someone that I knew to come up to me and say, do you still have that blog? Because that would be really, for me personally, embarrassing. I didn't want to be known for starting it and then dropping off and not finishing it. So Braveheart, in that sense, for me, just changed everything, because I was very motivated to keep putting out new posts and to not have anyone ask me if I was falling off the wagon there. And the accountability factor is without question the most important thing that it has brought me as a writer, not necessarily the most important thing that it's brought me as a writer who's going to be published. But the other thing that doing that, the writing on a weekly basis and challenging yourself to finish things, it helps with you refining your style and finding your voice. And probably you guys are all attending a women's writers conference, so you may be way ahead on me on this finding your voice business. When I first got my agent, she found me. I did not solicit a manuscript or look for her in any way. She found me and we met. And while we were talking, she said, "I love your voice. It's just so unique." And I was like, "Okay, you know, right on." And then later on, I was on the phone with my brother telling him all about it. And he's a screenwriter, so he knows a lot about writing and took all those kinds of classes in college. And I was telling him that. I was like, "She thinks my voice is unique. Doesn't it sound weird?" He's like, "She's talking about your style." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I've come into this writing business completely backwards, not setting out to be a writer, to know the terminology. But when I started my blog, I didn't have a voice, and I don't think she would have said that if she'd read my early posts. You know, I started out kind of like you play Scrabble. I had a thesaurus in one hand and, you know, a really clever consonant, and was ready to make a triple word score and just kind of overly thought about putting the pieces together as a game more than as a emotion or a feeling. And I was trying to write like somebody else. I don't have anyone in mind that I was trying to write like, but I was trying to sound like something you'd read in a magazine or something you'd read in a book that you were browsing at the store. And when you do this week after week after week, which is what a blog makes you do, it's incredibly hard to be someone else for that length of time, especially when you know your friends and family are watching and they're like, "Why did you use loquacious? That's not a word you would use. Like, why did you say that?" So you've got people out there who can call you out when you're not being yourself. And even if you're trying hard to be someone else, you can't keep it up forever. So having a blog will really help you refine your style and find your voice, and get into a routine where you're comfortable expressing yourself in a certain way, and you can approach the same idea many times from many different angles. And I often blog about similar topics, whether it's just kind of my struggle at work, because it's not a very exciting job. It's a very physically demanding job, and there's just a lot of running around. And I think people might read my blog and think it's a very exciting account of life in the kitchen, but I'm able to think about my work in a way that I never thought about before, because I wasn't giving myself an opportunity to write on a regular basis and finish these thoughts. Because you have them, you might start, you know, jotting something down or write a couple paragraphs, but you don't finish those ideas. And that's the other factor in having a blog there. Another important part of blogging that I think is invaluable to becoming a better writer is the unbiased feedback and also the support that you get from the people on the internet. You can get really good feedback from your friends and family, obviously, and some of us have spouses or friends who are honest and don't just, you know, constantly tell us how great we are and that we're doing a fabulous job. But they will never be as honest as the internet is going to be for you. And being able to post your work online and have total strangers offer their feedback on it will improve your writing in a way that I don't know that a writer's workshop or a seminar could possibly compete with. You know, these people aren't going to come on and comment about your word choice or your narrative structure, but they will tackle, you know, your ideas and how you're approaching things. And in one post, I wrote about my disdain for potlucks and banana pudding. It was a really early post on my blog, and it was about how potlucks are the worst. They say hell is other people, and I think hell is other people's food. And as a little kid, I was mortified of potlucks. It was just terrifying. It was all these like creepy dishes with sticky spoons, and just I didn't know what it was, and it wasn't my mom's food, and I really didn't like it. But the big thing I was criticizing in my post, writing as an adult, was that it was made of so much store-bought food. It was these, you know, however many layer bars made from bags of sweetened coconut and condensed milk and crumbled cookies, and these foods didn't seem like real foods to me. And so there was a lot of critique of that in the post. And I got an email from someone, and I wouldn't say it was a very thoughtful email, but it was a very honest email. And, you know, she was calling me an elitist and a snob, and how dare I judge these people, and, you know, what kind of high horse was I on? And it would have been really easy, and my first reaction was just to delete it, to be like, I'm a pastry chef. Of course I think it's better to make it from scratch. Who cares what you think? You're crazy. Delete. But if you really think about it, and I really thought about it, there's a lot of reasons why people aren't making things from scratch, whether it's because that's not how they grew up and their parents didn't make it that way, or whether they're disabled in some way and unable to be in the kitchen standing, baking for hours, and they just want to participate anyway. Or, you know, regardless of these factors, that's not my job. And the point of a potluck isn't the food. It's not a culinary competition. The point is to be plugging yourself into your community and talking and sharing a Sunday afternoon together and the experience of it. And I was really able to kind of take a hard look at my own judgments. And I would have never gotten that kind of feedback from a friend. They would have said, well, she's a pastry chef. That's the perspective she's writing from, and I'm not going to argue with that. But some random stranger on the internet told me that. And that has actually been probably some of the most helpful writing advice that I've had, and has ultimately shaped the division of my book, which I'll talk more about later. But my book is coming out, and it's going to be divided into two sections, and it's hand and brand made, because that's the one unifying element of growing up in America, is that we love Jell-O and we love Mom's Layer Cake. Like, these are two completely disparate seeming things that are an incredibly important part of our life. And I was discounting half of that because I thought, well, it came from a factory, I don't care about it. And then suddenly I was like, well, I do care about it. You know, banana pudding was a big part of everyone's childhood, and so what? It's got Nilla wafers in it. You can make Nilla wafers. Like, let's take that back. All that to say that the kind of feedback and the kind of honest and blunt things people will tell you there is really invaluable. And simultaneously, they'll hold you accountable and can be very encouraging. People like to emphasize how mean and nasty the internet can be, but the people I've encountered online have been so helpful and so supportive. Yeah, there are some occasional angry emails or, you know, someone who doesn't like something that I do, but there's these people who will week after week comment. And even if it's nothing much, I just know that there's that person again. They're still here, you know, 2 years later, leaving their little three-word comment on my blog when they don't have to be. And that's really encouraging and really helpful when you need to finish a piece, because blogging is a lot of hard work, and writing is a lot of hard work. And being able to say, someone's looking forward to this is huge. And I think that can help motivate you as a writer in a way that just showing it to friends occasionally wouldn't be able to compete with. I'm going through all of these. The other thing that my blog has done for me, which is kind of along the lines of continuing to post week after week, is that it's given me an incredible amount of stamina as a writer. It used to take me an entire weekend to write an 800 or 900 word essay, and I would just labor over every word and every choice and just, like, think about it. And when I say a weekend, I mean I was unplugged for the whole weekend. Just everything I have was put into it. And 2 years later, I'm able to generate something of that length, more like in an evening. And not that I just come home from work and, like, knock it out or something. It's still a lot of work, and it's still several hours. But it doesn't consume my time in a way that it did before. And that kind of stamina is incredibly important if you would like to get published and have a book. Because when you think about it, have you ever squeezed 150,000 words out of your brain? I mean, that's an incredible amount of work. And if you think that you can just write a proposal, get a book deal, and then just write this book, it's like going and signing up for a marathon and then not training for it and just saying, no, I'm going to save my best work for when I get to the race. Like, you would be in a world of hurt in that case. And I think blogging can help you in that, help you train and kind of build up your stamina so that when it does come time to write a book, that you know you can do it. You know that you've been able to output that kind of work in the past. I have a little less than 12 months to write a 416-page manuscript. A lot of that is recipes, and so that's not necessarily a lot of work as a writer, but half the book is food writing. And that means I have all these ideas to tackle. And it's a little scary, I'm totally not going to lie, but I've done that. I've been doing that for 2 years, and I feel really good about being able to conquer that. And so the blog has definitely given me that ability. And then the last and probably the most important part that a blog can do for you in terms of making you a better writer is it builds you a portfolio so that when you need to have a sample of your work ready, it is ready. And not only that, it's not a portfolio in your desk drawer at home, it's online and Google knows where it's at. I've received a lot of writing opportunities, freelance work, from someone just emailing me that they had been searching about making Oreos or been searching for some type of topic that I've previously covered and have written to say, hey, you know, I read your post on this topic, blah, blah, blah. Would you consider writing? And, you know, if those things, those thoughts I had kept to myself, they wouldn't be out there for other people to find. Kenji Ault is an editor at Serious Eats. He's known as the Food Lab. He used to write for Cooks Illustrated. He's the guy who does the whole vodka and pie crust business. So he's a really incredible writer and food writer. But he found out about me after we talked on Twitter really briefly, just like a sarcastic comment that we exchanged between us. And he clicked through to my blog because there's a link on your Twitter profile. And he kind of read around. And then, you know, later that afternoon sent me a direct message on Twitter asking me if I'd like to start writing for Serious Eats. And that's because my portfolio was online where everyone can see it and speaking for me. And you can't get that. I mean, you can spend all your time, if you want to pick up freelance work, you know, pounding doors, talking to editors, sending out samples, but that kind of organic relationship is incredible. And I didn't start out to do that. That wasn't the point of having a blog, but it's this benefit that I discovered. You know, my point in having a blog was just to do something fun. At the time, I had just left Holly Hill after 2.5 years there and was just kind of feeling like I was ready for something different. And a friend of mine who's a photographer said, well, why don't we do a cookbook together? And I was like, that seems kind of crazy because that's a lot of work. So let's not do that at all. And I was completely turned off and had wanted nothing to do with it. And he just really wanted to build up his own portfolio of food photography because he wanted to move in a more creative direction personally. And so we started working together. And that's how I started blogging. But all that to say is I didn't set out to accomplish any of these particular goals. They just kind of came to me. And I see people who are desperately trying to accomplish different goals in their own writing. And they're going about it. But at the same time, I look at their blog, if they have one, and oftentimes they don't. And they're just these short posts like, well, today I was not very motivated to do something, blah, blah, blah. There's like diary entries. They're not really these thoughtful pieces. And if you can keep pieces on your blog, if you have a blog, or choose to blog, thoughtful and just treat them as seriously as any other type of writing that you can do, the portfolio that becomes is absolutely invaluable and makes you incredibly alluring to a publisher. And as Anna was saying, having a platform is something that they're looking for, and a blog, especially over time, can give you a platform. And like Anna was saying, in nonfiction, the format isn't for you to write the whole book and give it up to someone. You write a proposal for it. And I used to think when I first started getting the idea of like, okay, maybe this could turn into something, that publishing was a bit of a zero-sum game, that either you got published or you didn't. But there are good publishers and there are bad publishers, and there's good and bad agents. And we've all read a book that the content was amazing, but the layout was really terrible, or it just never got the marketing it needed. And being able to seek that out for yourself is something you're totally capable of doing. And I didn't even know that. I had this idea that it'd be fun to be an author and to have something published someday, but I never did anything active. And I am in the lucky tiny fraction of a percent where an agent came and found me. And you could follow my footsteps and just write on the internet and put it out there, and maybe someday someone will find you too. But it's kind of senseless when you can intentionally pursue that and write a book proposal. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about my experience writing a book proposal. At first, you might think that because an agent found me, and the story behind that very briefly is that I had been writing for Serious Eats after having that conversation with Kenji Ault. He wanted me to do some freelance writing for them, and then it turned into a weekly column, which was paid. My photographer was paid for her work as well. So that was really exciting. It was the first time I'd ever been paid for my writing. And I'd been writing for them for about 2 months, 2 or 3 months, and I got it. phone call from Ed Levine, who is a pretty important food writer, and he is the founder of SeriousEats.com. And he was saying, you know, hey, Braveheart, this is Ed Levine. He called me Braveheart. He said that he really liked my work, and he said that he's been reading my columns, and he looks forward to reading them every week, and he checked out my blog and really liked my work, and that he wanted me to be introduced to his literary agent. Conveniently, she's also his wife, so that worked out well for them and for me as well. But, you know, he was able to, sitting in bed one night on his laptop, say, hey, honey, check this out, and have her look at it. And she was like, oh, I will check this out. And so she approached me. And so they called. I ended up going to New York, and I met them, which is kind of a funny and completely different story of its own that I've blogged about if you want to read that one. But when I met her, I guess I thought, oh, my God, I've been discovered, and I'm going to write a book, and it's going to be so amazing, and yay. I did not know you had to write a book proposal. I did not know what a book proposal was. And so, you know, when she says, okay, well, we're going to have to write this book proposal, I'm thinking it's like a foregone conclusion. This is just some paperwork I've got to fill out, and then magically I'm going to get published, because I just had no idea. It wasn't something that I'd ever researched or looked into. And that is not at all how you write a book proposal. So having done that, having approached this the wrong way, I feel like I can share a little bit of insight into the process and maybe what you should look out for when writing a book proposal. I kind of read, there's a book called How to Write a Book Proposal by Michael Larson. I don't know if you've heard it. I'm seeing some nods. It's really terrific. It talks about mechanics and structure, and my agent recommended that book to me, and so I read it, and I was like, awesome, I can totally do this. This is very clear instructions, and I'll just do it. So I spent a month writing it, because a month is a very long time to write something, and I thought I was really devoting myself to it. And I sent it to my agent, and this was in December. I'd been signed with her for 2 months. I sent it to her, and I got a one-line email back from her. I am very concerned. So, and in that moment, I was just leaving work, and I checked my... I was like, oh, I sent my proposal off. She's going to love it. I'm going to be published next month. This is so great. So I checked my phone as I was walking out the door, and I just, like, sat down on the front stoop of Table 310. You know, I am very concerned. And what I was thinking was that if she didn't know me, if she didn't already believe in me, if she hadn't already browsed through the entire catalog of my blog and all of this, I would have been at the bottom of her slush pile. Like, she would have moved on. And it's not that I'm not a good writer. They say that I am. But it was that it was a terrible proposal. And you can write a terrible proposal. And I have. So that's what I'd like to talk about a little bit. The two biggest mistakes that I made were thinking of my proposal as paperwork, first and foremost, and also then thinking of it as a sales pitch. And a lot of people will tell you a book proposal is a sales pitch, and I think that that's a very bad way to conceptualize it. Imagine you're going to take out a loan. You're going to start a small business, and you're going to go to the bank and ask for $50,000, $100,000 to start your small business. Are you going to call them this afternoon and make an appointment with their loan officer next week, next month? Like, no, you are going to spend an incredible amount of time researching your business and operational costs and projected income and what kind of tax incentives you'll have and whether you should be an LLC or another type of corporation. And you do all of this and work very hard because you know that asking for that kind of money is an incredibly serious thing. And you want to convince the bank not only that you're not a risk, but that you're an investment and that it's going to pay off for them to go with you and that you will pay them back with interest and your business will be successful. So in that same way, your book proposal is a business plan for your book, and you have to treat it just as seriously and invest just as much research into that, because you're literally asking a publisher for money. You're asking them for an advance, but in my case, my book is not going to be published until 2014. So I'm asking them to spend 2 years paying their editors, paying their lawyers, paying their proofreaders, paying their marketing department, and all these people that they have to pay every week to nurture my project to fruition. So truly, a business plan is exactly what your proposal is, because you're asking for an awful lot. And so to that effect, if you think you can write something that convincing in a couple of weeks, you know, it's crazy. And I was definitely that kind of brand of crazy. I thought, oh yeah, it's a great idea. I'm just going to write this out and everyone's going to fall in love with it. But the people who'll be looking at your proposal aren't just an agent and an editor. They're going to have a whole committee, especially once you get to the publishing side of it, a committee that'll look at it. And the committee is going to be filled with non-creative types like lawyers and accountants who are saying, the numbers don't add up. This doesn't make sense. So you need to not just give them a reason to like your idea, but a reason to love you and a reason to believe that you're not going to fail. And that takes an incredible amount of research and legwork. When I signed with my agent and when we started writing the book proposal, Food and Wine had not named me a Best New Pastry Chef, and the New York Times had never quoted me, and the Wall Street Journal did not interview me. I didn't have any of those things. So I think, you know, saying a couple of these examples about myself could make it seem like, well, I don't have that type of credentials or whatever, but that's not necessary. That was something that came along as the proposal was being written, and some of it very serendipitously right before we started shopping the proposal. But my agent didn't think any of those things were necessary. They just turned out to be the icing on the cake. So don't let that stop you if you feel like you don't have any type of press or credentials that would make good fodder for your business plan. One of the other kind of funny stories from when my proposal was being shopped is it was sold to Norton eventually, and my editor is Maria Guarnaschali, and she has worked on some pretty amazing food books, The Splendid Table, The Joy of Cooking. She's also worked with a host of incredible authors, not just food writers. She's a powerhouse. She is the senior editor at Norton and the vice president of the company. And she was in love, like genuinely in love with my proposal. And she would call me and say, hello, darling, I'm just thinking about you and wanted to let you know. I've got to go now, and hang up before I could respond. And this was before, the book deal had sold. This is when she was in the courtship phase. And, you know, it was very dramatic and very New York. And, you know, I'm thinking, this woman is madly in love with my proposal. Like, she just loves it. Like, this is so done. And, you know, my agent's like, well, let's hold tight. We don't know what's going to happen. But eventually one night Maria called me, and we were talking on the phone for a very long time about absolutely nothing. She's just calling to chat. And at the end of the conversation, she said, well, darling, I love you. And hopefully tomorrow my board will say the same thing. And so it's just the idea that for all the clout that she has and for all the amazing books that she's published and for all that she's done, she was editor for the Cake Bible as well. It's another hit of hers. For all that she's done, she can't just walk into her board and be like, guys, I found another one. You know, she's got to sell them. And your proposal needs to make that easier on the people who fall in love with your ideas to sell you as a business person. So invest yourself in that way and think of yourself as a business person, because that's going to be what you need to do to make that kind of impression. And after I kind of understood all of those things and realized how serious this was going to be, having had my first rejected proposal from my agent, I sat down. This was, I guess it was December that she told me that she was very concerned. And so I waited till I was past the holidays, and then in January threw myself at it with, kind of looking back, a terrifying obsession. And I spent 8 months writing it. It's 43 pages long, 10,000 words. It's huge, but it made an airtight case for my publication. And I did have an agent there to hold my hand and say, okay, honey, you're going off in the wrong direction. Come back here. But the biggest thing that changed was my attitude. Before, I thought, oh, this is like so much work. It's homework, and it's not creative, and this isn't the kind of writing that I want to do, and a really bad attitude. But your proposal is something so intimate and so personal, because it's making a case for not just you, but for your career, and that hopefully you will write not one, but many books. And so in that sense, it's going to be the one of the most important things that you ever write, and it needs to come from your heart and not come from a business side of you in terms of the way you approach it. You do need to approach it business-like in terms of the content and the research that you put into it. But if your heart is just like, well, it's paperwork, it's business, then your writing is going to be very cold. And your proposal is going to be an editor or an agent's first chance to hear your voice, because they have not read your blog, or they have not seen your work or your publications. And so if your proposal is very dry and formal, then they're not going to be able to get a sense of who you really are. And that was another thing that my proposal did the first time, when I wrote a very, very bad one. It was very dry. I kind of quashed whatever it is about me that I write, because I thought it was serious. This is business, and I'm going to write this paperwork and going to get it done. And it was very cold and impersonal. And so kind of realizing, well, yeah, it is business, but I have to put myself into it. I was able to write it in a much better way because I had my voice in there. I was not just being super dry and super statistical based. So it is a fine line between balancing the business side and putting your heart into it. And it can be very difficult. So don't be afraid of that. Don't be discouraged when you kind of think about how much work it is and how much like a business plan it is, because you need to make that case, but you need to make sure that your heart is where it needs to be. I had like a magical PowerPoint presentation prepared, but we were not able to use it. And I was going to show the outline of my book proposal so you could see how I had it broken down and the different chapters and sections that were in it. But the three things your proposal should do and that mine did, it should establish, first of all, that you have a great idea, and also that you are the most qualified person to write it, and that there is a market for your book. And that was another thing I didn't really understand, because I'm writing about baking and pastry. So I kind of thought, well, everybody loves baking and pastry. I don't really have to make a case for brownies, do I? Like, this is pretty obvious. But you have to kind of really dig in there and make a better case for yourself than that. The other thing, talking about you have a great idea, is that you should wrestle with that idea considerably. When we first talked, when I first met my agent, the topic we were talking about was culinary time travel, and that was what I wanted to write about. And it's this idea that when you taste food, when you taste anything, that recipe is giving you insight into the past, and you can eat something and literally taste history. And so that was my idea, and I thought it was solid. And I'd read something about if you can reduce your concept into three words, then you know it's sufficiently potent. And that's not necessarily true, because when I wrote this proposal, the first one, about culinary time travel, my agent's big critique on it when she was talking to me was how abstract it was, and that I was mostly just talking about feelings and how it's so good to, you know, have that slice of something that reminds you of when you're a little kid, but that was too abstract. And so I started taking this idea of culinary time travel and wrestling with it more and trying to distill it into something more specific. And you know, the first step for me was to say, okay, it's not culinary time travel, it's like dessert time travel, because I'm only talking about desserts. And then as I kept thinking about it, then realizing that time travel was just my kind of personal way of saying history, and that this was really going to be about dessert history. But then phrasing it like that doesn't sound very fun or exciting anymore. Suddenly it's history. And I didn't want to just like trot out some dry facts that you would read on Wikipedia about some dessert. I wanted to say something new and interesting. And as I thought about that, then I realized, you know, it's the secret history. Like, how did these desserts become popular, and how did they take off, and how did we all come to love yellow layer cake with chocolate frosting, and why do we all adore chocolate chip cookies, and why is the smell of apple pie, you know, in a house something that smells like home to all of us? And so realizing that, I wanted to write the secret history of desserts, but then that too is still broad, because I don't want to talk about European desserts, and I don't want to talk about the amazing desserts I had in Japan. They're very interesting and exciting desserts, but that's not what the topic of my book was going to be. So then realizing I wanted to write about my culture and my experiences with desserts. And then that too is still broad, because do I want to write about being a Kentuckian or being a Southern girl and blowing it up, until eventually I was like, I want to write about American desserts. So in that way, it was, you know, expanded from being Kentucky, Southern, American. I think there's this idea that if you're going to reduce your idea down and you're going to concentrate it down, that you're narrowing your focus. And I was, in fact, broadening my focus, but it was making my concept more concrete. And eventually we came to the secret history of iconic American desserts. And that's right now the subtitle of my book, although that might change. But that was the idea that I eventually came to, and it took me a month or more of just thinking through this idea to get that. So whatever idea you have that you want to tackle in your proposal, just wrestle with it, because whatever you have right now is probably not sharp enough. You need to distill it until it's in this really concrete and pure form that you can tell someone. You know, if I say culinary time travel, what do you guys think about? Who knows? what does that mean? But when I say the secret history of iconic American desserts, you have a very strong idea of what kind of desserts might be in this book and whether or not you like to read it. And once you have that idea, you can write a much better proposal because you're writing about something very specific. So give yourself that time. You know, a friend of mine wants to write a book, and he'd been talking to me about it, and he told me he has the next 2 weeks off, and so he's going to write his proposal. And I was like, if you can get the idea nailed down in 2 weeks, I'll be very proud of you. Like, it's a lot to wrestle with. Definitely give yourself the time you need to do that kind of thinking, because the proposal is strongly about ideas and the idea of your book, and you have to have a really solid grasp on exactly what that is. And then beyond that, your proposal will cover how and why you are the most qualified person to write this book. And, you know, like I said earlier, this isn't about citing all the famous things you've done or what you've accomplished per se. My About the Author section in my book doesn't include any mention of Food and Wine or New York Times or any of that. It's a story about how I grew up eating boxed cake mixes and cookie dough out of the tube, and then went to culinary school and became obsessed with making everything from scratch, absolutely everything. And that was the period of my life where I had just utter disdain for the cake mix doctor or anybody who put a packet of pudding into their cookies or all these secret tricks that people do using store-bought things. And I just thought this was absolutely obscene, and I was very against it. And I moved to Japan and was studying language and living abroad, obviously. I did not have a lot of tastes of home. And the one thing I could find, the one American thing I could find, was a sleeve of Oreos in the foreign section of the grocery store. And it was like a godsend. And in Japanese, the slogan for Oreos translated is, the beautiful deliciousness of bitter and sweet. And at the time, just learning to read Japanese and taking this, it meant so much to me. And just eating that Oreo, I felt more at home than I did when my mom called. And that's all that's in my About the Author section. I'm not trying to impress anybody. I was just trying to introduce myself and say why I am qualified, because I understand desserts and pastries from a professional standpoint, but I also understand them from an American standpoint, from the sometimes you just need an Oreo and it's the best option. And ultimately, that was something that very much sold my proposal, that people got the sense that I was someone who could effectively write about this topic. So when you're writing about yourself, don't worry about trying to impress people with anything. Just try and be yourself. And I know that's very tired advice that you hear, but showing them how you're qualified from a mental perspective to tackle this subject will go a long way in convincing them that you have some unique insights to offer. And one of the editors that I interviewed with, at the end, my book was considered very seriously by 5 different publishers. And during one of the interviews, one of the editors said, "We don't need any more cookbooks, we need more personalities." And I think that's probably true in any genre of nonfiction, that whatever it is that you're writing, there's probably already a book about that thing, and they're not looking for that, but they are looking for a new person to deliver it, because as new generations come up, we want to read these books again, and they're not going to want to, you know, pull out some book that's 20 years old to walk them through something. They want a new one. And why are you that person to talk about this subject to a new audience? If you do have accolades, you absolutely can have a press section. My proposal did have a press section, but the thing that my editor came back and said in the end was that she was more impressed with the writing and with finding out about me, and the press was nice and it was a bonus, and that made it easier for the lawyers and the accountants to sign off on, but they were the icing on the cake. So definitely include it if you have it, but don't let it stop you if you don't. The last part of covering what your proposal needs to accomplish is the market and marketability of your book. And that was probably the hardest part for me to write. Like I said earlier, I didn't feel like I needed to sell the idea of brownies. These are something everyone should love. So if whatever your topic is, if you can tell yourself, imagine you're explaining it to someone from a different country who doesn't understand the culture and climate of what you're dealing with. And what I was able to say in my proposal was talking about how, you know, on the Food Network, there's more and more programming now devoted to desserts. There's Top Chef Just Desserts, and there's Cupcake Wars, and there's books the copycat recipe books and the cake doctor and all these different books that come together to talk about desserts and talk about these kinds of homemade, uniquely American desserts. And you want to introduce the editors to the idea that there is already a strong market for your book. And even if you want your book to be a very new sort of book that's not like anything else on the market, you don't want to overemphasize the uniqueness of your book, because what you're saying is, in the last 200 years of publishing, there has never been a book like this written before, which is establishing an audience of exactly zero people, and that is, like, terrible and shooting yourself in the foot. So what you want to do instead is make a case that your book is going to be part of an already thriving market, and you want to talk about what this market is and how successful it is, and there's shows on Food Network doing this, or, you know, whatever industry it is, emphasize what people are doing and why that market is a part or something that your book needs to be a part of. Another section of the proposal will be about who's going to read the book, your audience, and it's in the market section. And the temptation is just to say, well, everyone's going to want my book. Will pediatricians want it? No. So not everyone wants your book. So give really concrete examples. In mine, and this would have been an awesome PowerPoint slide, the section where I have all my proposal bits, but I said that for the people reading my book, intermediate level bakers will want to read it. People concerned about eating overly processed foods will want to read it. History buffs will want to read it. Get specific. Name the exact type of demographic of person that's going to want to read your book, not just, you know, moms will want to read it. Like, full-time moms or stay-at-home dads, or, you know, get lots of adjectives in there, and this exact kind of person will want to read it and why, because that gives them a little bit more to go on and to establish that. The other big section, when you're talking about the marketability of your book and your markets, is your platform. And for me, that was a huge part of my proposal, and I think another solid reason to start blogging, is they're going to want to know all about your blog if you have one. And publishers really do like bloggers, because bloggers are just authors that have an audience, and you're showing them that you have been writing and you've made this effort to put yourself out there, and they'll think, you know, if you made it this far on your own putting yourself out there, how far will they go when we help them? First-time authors are always a risk for publishers to sign, and so you want to do anything you can to lessen that risk, and having a blog definitely does that, because it says that you're making strides on your own to introduce yourself to a market. A few don'ts about your proposal. Don't make claims. Don't say it's going to be a bestseller or a runaway success or a sleeper hit. All you have to do is deliver facts. You don't have to try and praise yourself or praise your concept. You want the editors and the agents to read your proposal and think, oh, this could be a bestseller. But the second you say it, their inner skeptic is going to come out and really come down on you. So build a case for your book, but don't make the claims explicit. And the other thing is not to get formal. You've got to talk about statistics. You've got to talk about numbers. And if you have a blog, you're going to be talking about analytics and your Twitter followers and how many subscribers you have and that sort of thing. But even so, keep your voice in there, because if you just turn on this dry business person voice, you'll get lost. And so by keeping it more personal, then they're able to see how you can deliver even boring information, because most nonfiction books at some point are going to cover boring information, and you need to demonstrate your ability to make that a digestible topic. I think we're good.
Thank you, Stella.
Thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Kentucky Women Writers Conference and the University of Kentucky. We would like to thank LexArts, the Kentucky Foundation for Women, and the Carnegie Center for Literacy and Learning for supporting these endeavors. For more information, please visit KentuckyWomenWriters.org.